We'll now turn to any questions that the audience may have. Thank you. And so with that, we'll now open it up to Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, you may do so using the chat function. Mesdames et messieurs, si vous désirez poser une question, vous pouvez le faire en utilisant l'outil de clavardage. Mr. Cunningham, we received questions in advance related to our investment in Rivera.
Yeah, thank you, Stefano. Good morning, everybody. A lot of related questions to Rivera. Let me start by saying that we absolutely deplore the losses of lives in Rivera homes, as well as all other long-term care and other facilities across the country. Clearly, this is not just a Rivera problem, that there were bad outcomes across the board. And we look forward to the public dialogue which needs to take place in order to decide on the public policy towards how we're going to look after our aging population and how we're going to pay for that care that they need. Remains to be seen what the public policy decision is on the funding source, whether it be public or private. We believe that PSP and investors like us are the actual ideal private source of capital, should there be a desire or a need for private capital, given our profile, our commitment to governance and best practices, our long-term view of returns. And so if there's a role for us, we're interested in playing it, and we certainly want to be involved, and Rivera wants to be involved in the discussions of what is the best solution going forward in that sector. We have been involved with various government entities, provincial entities, for several years. A large portion of our portfolio is in Ontario. I can tell you that Rivera was engaged with ministry officials in Ontario going back many years to upgrade, in an effort to upgrade existing obsolete facilities. These, in often cases, would be referred to as C homes that are grandfathered in their physical makeup. And it's been a difficult discussion to get the allocated capital in order to upgrade these to modern homes. And there's a disproportionate number of the bad outcomes that occurred in some of those obsolete homes where you had four bed wards and shared bathrooms and narrow hallways and things. And this has all been well documented. So, you know, we are committed at both at PSP and at Rivera. Rivera, of course, has a very strong independent board of directors, including a medical doctor, and they have a chief medical officer who's very focused on care on an ongoing basis. And we're committed to best practices in that industry. We've been frustrated at PSP at the inability to move faster in the redevelopment of some of these obsolete facilities. And I can tell you, and I said this at the public meeting last year, if we don't believe that we're going to be able to provide the level of care in these facilities that is up to our standards, then we won't continue to invest in this sector. But at the moment, we believe being part of the dialogue is the best solution.
Second series of questions regarding single family residents and our investment with Pretium.
Yeah, so I'll say that the concern about Pretium is a single family rental business in the United States. It's a fairly recent business, came out of the financial crisis when so many homes were foreclosed by lenders. It was definitely a case of exuberance in the development of some of these homes. Many people owned multiple homes and created a bubble. And out of that came an industry, single family rental, which has proven over the last 10 years to be very popular amongst certain aspects of the of society, particularly millennials who are looking for, you know, that backyard to raise their kids in, but don't want to invest the cash in a home. That dream of home ownership is less strong than it was for previous generations. And so the single family rental home has business has evolved from that to be a well, it's not the most significant part of the housing market in the United States, but it is part of the market. We were surprised by the controversy, if you want, that was raised here, because we see it having very similar characteristics to other multifamily apartment rentals. We did our due diligence on the business and on the operator, and we're convinced that the best practices have been employed across the board. When the controversy came up about high level of evictions in the portfolio, we dug into it with our managers and didn't find any red flags with respect to you know, the practices that were being undertaken by the manager. We didn't see any racial profiling. In fact, the manager doesn't have the racial profile of any of their tenants in their records. They were asked by a subcommittee or a committee of Congress to submit information along with all the other single family rental operators in the states. They submitted actually more than they were asked for. And to date, there's been no follow-up. There's been no appearance in front of the congressional committee. And we don't know where that's going, but I can tell you that our homework and our due diligence is consistent with best practices. We can tell you that there have been no evictions of tenants who had CDC declarations, either during the period when evictions were not allowed and subsequent to the expiration. And we've been tracking that, and there have been no eviction notices issued at all during June and July. So, you know, we encourage our managers to engage with tenants who are struggling to pay rent for various reasons. And we're confident that they're doing so.
Next question regarding carbon footprint and investment in energy sector.
Obviously a huge area. And there were a lot of questions in addressing this from different sides. So let me take a broader, a bit of a broad brush to this. And as you see in our responsible investment report, which I hope everybody has read, who's interested in this subject, ESG issues, including climate change, are a significant part of every investment activity that we undertake. Our managing director of responsible investments is a member of our investment committee, our management investment committee. That group, the responsible investment team, is involved in every private investment, both, you know, before it's made and after it's made, to identify potential issues, make sure they get mitigated or dealt with, and then an ongoing basis to ensure best practices and assisting, in many cases, the management teams to adopt best practices or better practices, as the case may be. So that's on every investment we do. On the public side, we favor engagement, whether it's through groups of investors where we have a greater impact, or occasionally one-on-one dialogues with the public company management to help them understand our positions on ESG issues. And we've had a great deal of success at helping those management teams. Now, all this is part of our approach to investing in, I'll call, sustainable investing, which is a belief that we hold very strongly, that companies that have best practices, ESG, whether it's environment, social, or governance, will outperform those that don't over the long term. And so regardless of where you are in the call it the energy versus whether it's renewables or carbon, in each of those sectors, those that are more focused on say greener will perform better over time. And we take that into account when we underwrite our potential investments in all these sectors. We believe we'll get a better return, not just from investing in things which are more green, but by taking things and making them more green. I'm using green as an euphemism for best practices in all of ESG. But we believe that is the best way to enhance returns in everything that we do. We do not have exclusions of activities other than a few very, very strong exceptions, which are written into our mandate. But we don't believe excluding and disinvesting is the right way to go. We believe engagement is the right way to go. If you truly want to make a difference and impact on climate and carbon footprint, you do it by engaging with, say, energy companies and others on improving practices and reducing their carbon footprint. Disinvestment, it may make my own numbers look better if I were to disinvest from a certain sector, but it does nothing to improve the carbon footprint overall. As somebody with less sensitivity to say a carbon footprint would typically buy these assets and they would continue on in their ways. We believe that being an owner, an engaged owner, moving management teams forward will actually make a far better, bigger difference in improving carbon footprints and in climate change. And we, just about a year ago, were part of the Maple 8, we're called CEOs, who strongly encouraged companies, including ourselves, to adhere to SASB and TCFD standards in their reporting. The intention of that is so that we have unified reporting on standards and metrics, which people are generally in agreement that these are the right ones and we can develop them and make them better. We have a certain transparency and consistency so that companies and potential investments can be compared one to another. And, you know, we strongly believe that that is the way to move, individual companies and say the general economy in the right direction with respect to the issues around climate change and around ESG. And we, in our own annual report, reported on our adherence to TCFD and SASB standards as we'd committed to in that release.
All right. Following set of questions regarding our offices, specifically in Hong Kong, London. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, we have offices in Montreal, our principal office, London, New York, and Hong Kong, and a head office location in Ottawa, which is only a couple of people. It's an interesting question coming out of COVID. What will happen with office usage and space? There were questions around, costs of maintaining offices, and there were also questions around, would we remain in London? Would we remain in Hong Kong? So let me address them in two pieces. In Montreal, London, and New York, we signed long-term leases. It's not a significant amount of money when you look at the total size of PSP, our footprint. And at this point in time, there's no sublet market to speak of in any of those offices. So we're not, as we wait to see how post-COVID office use pans out, we're not making any significant decisions with respect to, existing leases and footprint where we have. We do have a plan with our employees that we have worked on over the last year that we call our hybrid work plan, which will be a combination of work from home, which we, of course, have been doing for a year and a half, had the capability of doing prior to COVID technology-wise and had policies to allow people to work from home periodically. But it'll be more structured going forward as we've learned that working from home actually works, but there are limitations. So we've just announced yesterday we're pushing the pushing that back to January as we wait to see how the COVID how the variants evolve, I guess is the best way of describing it, and how protocols evolve. So and then in terms of where we're located, we continue to be committed to where we have offices. London, of course, went through Brexit, but it may not be part of the EU, but it's still part of Europe. It remains a significant financial center and a significant jumping off point for Europe. We've described it as our European hub, and it continues to be that. It's been the crossroads of the world for years. And Brexit may have altered that equation a little bit, but hasn't changed it to the point that we would consider moving. Hong Kong obviously has been through some upheaval with protests and COVID. We have only 6 people in Hong Kong as of today. We had ambitions to grow it. Obviously, we haven't grown it during the pandemic. And with it ongoing, we're sort of in a holding pattern there. We are committed to investing in Asia and expanding our Asian footprint. This is clearly the growth area of the future for economic activity globally, and we need to be part of it. We actually have a program this year where all of our asset classes and investment people are getting together, and we're going to be more clear on our ambition for Asia by the end of this fiscal year. So that's an initiative that we're very much engaged in right now. So maybe more to come on that.
Thank you. Question regarding diversity at the ExCo level.
Maybe I'll take that and Neil can follow up. I mean, we're very proud at the board of being a gender balanced board, and we're in active recruitment now for 3 new directors. And so I envisage in the near future, we will actually have more women than men on the board. And we have a significant amount of minority representation as well. So we are very much encouraging the executive and the business to do whatever they can on the diversity, equality, and inclusion front. And the company is making progress. And Neil, you can speak specifically to answer the question about the executive group.
Yeah, sure. We have gender diversity at the executive team. 3 of my 8 direct reports are women. We have not cracked the nut yet on visible minority at the executive team. It remains an objective. The next layer down, our senior leaders, we've made significant progress on the advancement of women and visible minorities from where we were to where we are. It's not quite balanced, but it's getting closer to balance that level. This continues to be a challenge, not just for PSP, but for everyone in the financial industry that we are focused on. We have a very active equity, inclusion, and diversity program at PSP, and it is designed. There are 8 affinity groups that we focus on. I've been co-chairing it for the last 4 years, and it's really focused on ensuring that we have diversity of all kinds at all levels through the organization, and we have objectives for achieving that. And we know what we need to do. And I'll say 2 things. 1, we're committed to it. And the 2nd is it's hard because, everyone's trying to do the same thing.
A related question on our strategy. What does high performing team pillar mean to you, and what have you done to achieve this objective?
So multifaceted is a great question. multifaceted, and it's a as you say, a good segue from diversity. A high performing team is a diverse team. It's a team with diversity of views, diversity of experience, diversities of outlook and background, and that's gender and ethnic as well as education and age. That is a strong focus that we develop that diversity. We also, of course, have programs, leadership training programs, how we do things. We talk about the PSP way. In other words, we teach people how to be a leader in all the different aspects of leadership, which we want to be consistent across the firm. We have, remuneration and benefits packages and, even things like work from home, which are important for attracting and retaining that diverse workforce who have very different needs and expectations and desires of what work looks like. And so we nurture all of that in order to get the most out of our people. And it's, there's some very simple stuff like, making sure people know how to run a meeting where everybody gets to speak. I actually think that one of the benefits of work from home for the last 18 months is people have gotten used to using the hand up feature when they want to speak. And that automatically means, the loudest person in the room doesn't necessarily carry the day as you identify the speaker. So those are important tools. It goes from the big picture of, who's in the room. Diversity isn't just who's in the room, but actually having their opinions valued. And so making sure we get the right mix in the room and that we then can encourage participation are the two keys to that.
Next question. Can you outline allocations in Canada, US, and international? And do you foresee changes in the coming year?
Sorry, I missed the beginning of that question, Stephanie.
Can you outline the allocations in Canada, US, and international? And do you foresee changes in the coming year?
So the allocations were disclosed in the annual report. And so you can see them there. The intention in the future, as I said a few minutes ago, is we will be expanding our investments in Asia and our exposure to Asia. And that will come at the, I can use the word expense of, or, the reallocation from all three of Canada, US, and, Canada, US, we'll call it North America and Europe. So there's a general shift in that direction.
Can you comment on your Chinese real estate holdings?
Yeah, they're minimal. I'm going by memory. The number is, I believe, under $1 billion, exclusively or almost exclusively invested in logistics. I believe there's some retail centers still. And it's an area of review for obvious reasons. Investing in Asia and capturing, the Asian dynamic means you're capturing, obviously, Chinese growth. But how you do so, with different asset classes, different strategies, is part of that review and that initiative that we have ongoing in this current year. When I talk about our ambition for Asia, that's what I'm talking about. But there's if the question's related to the real estate company in China, which is in trouble with its huge amount of debt, we're not in that sector. That's a multifamily, condo construction sector, and we're not invested in that sector at all. So we're at this point not seeing any contagion from that that exposure or that that incident.
Ladies and gentlemen, I remind you that if you wish to ask a question, you can do so using the chat function. Mesdames et messieurs, si vous désirez poser une question, vous pouvez le faire en utilisant la fonction de clavardage. So Karian, we've covered all the topics that have been requested this morning. I turn it over to Mr. Glynn for concluding words.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be able to present at the our annual general meeting. There are some very intelligent questions, and I think we've had a very thorough review of some of the hotter issues that we face. We are in challenging times, and PSP has come through the last 18 months very well, in my view, and we hope to go from strength to strength. So we're feeling optimistic about the future, and we have significant support from our stakeholders, and we have to salute the people within the executive team led by Neil and all of his staff who have performed exceptionally well in the last 18 months and got us to where we are today from a standing start of slightly over 20 years ago. So we are very, very proud of where we are, and we have challenges and we have opportunities. And thank you very much for joining us today.